We need to deploy new calendars on January 1st and need to write 2016 on documents, but what else will be different? A few state laws take effect on January 1st as a matter of course. We'll focus on changes in fishing regulations for a few minutes here. Oregon anglers will have to take note of new rules on fishing starting Friday. The rules took shape after a long public input process. The Native Fish Society is one of several groups that took part in that process. Jake Crawford is with the Native Fish Society. He is the River Steward Program Director based in Southern Oregon. The Native Fish Society is headquartered in Oregon City. And Jake, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Yeah, thanks for having me today.
Give us an idea of the work of the Native Fish Society. The name seems self-explanatory, but it's probably a little more detailed than that.
Yeah, sure. So the easiest way to say it is that our job is to give a voice to wild native fish. And we do that by following the best available science and working with state and federal agencies that manage fish and water to ensure that come decision-making, there's a voice in there for the fish. Native Fish Society itself is based in Oregon City, but we do work all the way up into Washington and western Idaho and down into Northern California, particularly through our River Steward program.
Which you're in charge of, I gather.
Yeah. So River Stewards, they're all volunteers, and it's sort of the grassroots arm of our organization. They're place-based wild fish advocates that take ownership of a particular river that they live in or near, and then they learn as much as they can and make sure that they're giving a voice to those fish.
What is the primary voicing that needs to happen? What is not happening well enough for fish that you feel they do need a voice?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think the idea is to give a voice to the voiceless, right? And so these animals can't speak for themselves. And so come fishing regulations like we'll talk about today and land use decisions, whether it's habitat protection or water uses, oftentimes our needs come first as humans. And so it's important to make sure that somebody is in there speaking for the fish. The fish are really an indicator species. If they're not doing well, it's a sign of maybe things to come.
So indications of health on the landscape, whether it be forests or farms or anything else around.
Right. Kind of the canary in the coal mine example.
Right. So I want to make sure that we understand that, because here's an opportunity to do some distinction here. But the River Steward Program is not the same as the River Keeper Program.
Yeah, exactly. So the River Keeper Program was first established on the East Coast and has spread throughout the country and even the world. And their message or the work that they do is cold, clean, swimmable, drinkable water, I believe, is the expression for that. And that's a little bit different because they focus almost exclusively on the Clean Water Act and implementation of that. Now, we work very closely with some of those riverkeeper groups. The distinction for us is that we focus more on the animal itself. And so we're looking at the Endangered Species Act protections and native fish conservation policies that focus specifically on wild native fish. And let me make a distinction here. The difference between wild and native. Native fish are any indigenous population that have been here and evolved here, versus wild, meaning that they are self-sustaining and not produced into a hatchery environment. So you can have and it's important for these regulations because you can have a brown trout, for example, which was brought here from Europe. It's self-sustaining. They're not supported by hatchery programs, by fish managers, but they're not native. Versus a hatchery salmon or steelhead, which is native to the area, but it's not wild because they're supported through hatchery programs.
Okay, that's a good distinction to make, so that you're not automatically excluding the hatchery fish as something unworthy if they are, in fact, native to those particular water systems.
Sure, and it has different implications for the way that they're managed. And as we've seen with the fishing regulations, non-native species can seriously counter conservation goals by negatively impacting wild populations.
Jake Crawford's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. River Steward Program Director of the Native Fish Society is here to talk about the simplification, as it's been termed, of fishing rules in the state of Oregon effective January 1st. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 over the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Just as I looked online for the PDF of the existing fishing regulations, I noticed that it's a fairly long PDF. And this was one of the issues, I gather, was that there were a lot of regulations to take in.
Yeah, I think that was the real driving force behind the simplification process. And for a number of years, anglers across the state have been asking the department to simplify their regulations so that they're less of a barrier to entry. You can look through, and we've got a number of different regions and districts, and the angling regulations themselves have become quite the small phone book there.
I'm trying to count here. It looks like about 15 different angling zones and fish districts.
Yeah, I think when this process was started, there were somewhat like 500 unique fishing regulations for the different species throughout Oregon. And so the goal of the department was really to find areas that they could simplify those and so that there was less overlap between – or more overlap between them that they could – some person that wanted to go and fish in eastern Oregon wouldn't necessarily have to learn a whole new set of regulations to go and fish in the Rogue Valley, for example.
Was it as different as things like lures and bag limits and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of them have to do with restrictions on the type of fish that you can take, that you can legally harvest, the fishing tackle that you're legally allowed to use, and that can be all the way down to the size of the hook that you're using, whether you're using bait or artificial flies or lures.
So it really started with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, ODFW?
Yeah, so there's basically two primary ways in which fishing regulations are changed. The first is, for example, the way that they're currently being done through this process, where the department listened, the commission was put the directive on the agency in order to simplify these regulations. So interdepartmental, from Salem all the way down to the district office, worked to identify regulations that could be simplified. And then those were brought forward to the commission as one package. The alternative way is every couple years, the public has an opportunity to suggest regulations that they would like to see changed on their river. And we'll see that opportunity again in a couple of years here, I think so.
It sounds like this process had been going on for several years anyway.
Yeah, I think that what we've ended up with today was definitely the product of multiple years of them working to try to figure out how to best simplify these regulations to keep using that.
Why had they gotten so complex, Jake? I mean, why would you need so many different rules from, it seems like, almost watershed to watershed?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think one of the things that we were really interested in as Native Fish Society participating in this process was that a lot of these fishing regulations have developed over the years as conservation measures, as opportunities to conserve the species while still allowing angling opportunity. And so our biggest fear, I think, was really a reversal of those conservation regulations. And you can see that reflected in some of the comments that we made. Again, this angling regulation period is for trout and warm water species only. If you start to look at the salmon and steelhead regulations, those are even more specific and varied across the landscape, because you've got fish that are anadromous or seagoing, and they come into the river at certain times and they'll spawn at certain times. And so a lot of those regulations are put in place in order to protect the spawning fish or to protect the fish when they're their most vulnerable.
But the rest of the time, they're not in the river. They're not hanging around.
Yeah, not the sea-run fish like salmon and steelhead. Mm-hmm.
Jake Crawford, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's with the Native Fish Society, where he's the River Steward Program Director. We're talking about new rules for fishing in Oregon taking effect on January 1st. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So knowing that ODFW is working on revisions to the rules, presenting these to the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission. In Oregon, it's always commission, department. Sounds like it really presented an opportunity for the Native Fish Society and others to help have an input to the process.
Yeah, I think this was a great opportunity for one, for us to support some of the actions that were going on through the department. I think a lot of times we find ourselves, you know, at odds maybe with some of the regulations that are in place or some of the work, but I think this was a great opportunity for us to lend some support for a few of the regulations in particular.
So let's talk about some of those. Let's talk about some of the things that you were particularly vocal in requesting, and then what actually ended up in the rules.
Yeah, so I think the biggest one and probably the biggest change that has happened is no bag and size limits on non-native fish in the Umpqua River, the Columbia River, and the John Day River. And so that included large and smallmouth bass, channel fish, catfish, walleye, and other fish, other non-native species that have a negative impact on native populations, such as salmon and steelhead. They'll eat juvenile fish, and as we're trying to recover these species across the Northwest, it's sort of death by a thousand cuts. And so any opportunity that we can to give those fish another chance, such as removing non-native fish, it's a better opportunity for them.
I mean, it really sounds like, you know, the intention seems clear. Go crazy, you know, get rid of all the fish that we don't want here that are not native to this river system.
Sure, yeah, and they also did that with brook and brown trout through many rivers throughout the state as well. Brook trout are brought in from the East Coast, and a lot of these fish, you know, 100 years ago or less, were planted as sort of Johnny Appleseed throughout the water here. But today, when we look back, they have negative impacts on these fish, and research has shown that they're eating juvenile fish, depending on the water body, or they're at least impeding the recovery of these species.
Is the period of white settlement on the West Coast short enough that it is possible in some people's minds to get back to something resembling the system that the white settlers found when they got here? I mean, as opposed to the centuries of settlement on the East Coast, which I don't think anybody can remember what the rivers were like when people first arrived.
Right.
From Europe.
Yeah, that's great. I think, you know, we have a really great opportunity to at least protect the wild fish that are here still. And we don't have the same type of development that, you know, 200 years ago on the East Coast and what they've done to the Atlantic salmon stocks out there. So we do have opportunities here to reverse this decline. Is it going to happen in every watershed throughout the Northwest and major urban cities? I can't answer that. I hope so, but that's still a possibility in many of the areas, particularly here in Southern Oregon, Northern California, where we haven't seen that type of major development in waterways.
Talking about native fish and others with Jake Crawford from the Native Fish Society here on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the River Steward Program Director. You can join us at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. So the Native Fish Society has been around for 20 years now. You're celebrating an anniversary this year, I understand.
Yeah, this is the 20th year of Native Fish Society. Our founder, Bill Bakke, founded us in 1995, and we're happy to be here. I think what we're seeing today is the major growth in the River Steward program. Currently, we have over 80 volunteer river stewards in four states. So,
given the fact that you've been around for 20 years, I mean, are you able to point to some successes and say, hey, look, you know, native fish are stronger in this system or that system because of the efforts of this group and others?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think it's important to recognize that it's a collaborative effort with a lot of the groups that we work with, and there's some major successes that we've had over the last couple of years. A lot of them are sort of the watershed scale, you know, but one of the things in particular, kind of looking at the fishing regulations that we were having issues with was, you know, 20 years ago, we were working to establish a slot limit on the Deschutes. And the slot limit means that you can harvest a rainbow trout within a certain length. And that was established based off the work of Bill Bakke and others up in that area. And what we're finding is years down the road, some of those conservation gains back then get repeated and resurfaced where you have to keep fighting them. And so that sort of came up within the commission process or within the department process this year to simplify the regulations where they thought, hey, the slot limit is kind of confusing for people. Let's get rid of that and just open up the harvest to 8 inches and above.
Okay. So you mentioned that one of the major gains is the no bag and size limits for non-native fish in the Umpqua, Columbia, and John Day systems. What are some of the things that you were seeking in new fishing rules that you didn't get? What are some of the things you would have liked to have seen in there?
Yeah, I think we would have liked to have seen an expansion of that. I mean, it's but certainly that was a great start. Some of the other ones that we'd like to see were here in Southern Oregon, the Williamson River was a big win where we were allowed, where the department removed the harvest of fish, rainbow trout, as they were in the Williamson. And largely that was to protect fish as they, rainbow trout, as they were migrating up into the Sprig and the Sycan. One of the things that we thought was sort of inconsistent was that once those fish made it up into the sprig and cycan, then you could actually harvest them. And so we were trying to get them to complete the full length of that migration and the change. But certainly this year was a major step forward.
I can see how anybody who's just getting started fishing would perhaps do some head scratching here and think, well, now, wait a second, I can catch this fish in this place on this river, but X miles up, I can't catch the same fish, or at least not the same size. I mean, is it that confusing? Or I mean, has it been simplified somewhat with this set of, this is referred to as a rule simplification, isn't it?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we suggested was we're looking at days that you can start fishing and stop fishing. That was a big one. So in some areas, some states, there's a start date on mid-April or the April 31st or the fourth week of April. And then there's an ending date sometime in November. And that is largely to protect spawning fish. We still have some inconsistencies within the starting and stopping dates within this rule change. And so one of the things that we suggested was pick one date and then open it on that date and pick another date and close it on that date. That would be the simplest. So then an angler who wanted to go and fish in one area could transfer that over to another area.
So what do you recommend for people who might be thinking about fishing for the first time? I mean, if they're trying to get up on regulations, it's not like you go out to the river and there's this, you know, big set of rules posted out there. I can't imagine there are too many of the rule books hanging out by the riversides and stuff. So, I mean, what do you recommend for people to do to give themselves an education on what the new rules are?
Yeah, I mean, they can pick up a copy of the local fishing regulations at any fishing and tackle store or fly shop. It's available online, and there's a lot of great information in there. Another thing that they can do is just contact their local ODF&W office and check and see with them and say, hey, I'm having some confusion. I want to go out fishing this week. Am I allowed to do that?
They're pretty clear on that, I must admit. You know, having called there once and said, you know, my kids want to fish on Bear Creek. No, there's no fishing on Bear Creek.
And see, that's a new change. It used to be, you know, however many decades ago, you could go and fish on Bear Creek, but we've had to change those.
Indeed. Jake Crawford, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll take a couple more minutes talking about fish and the new fishing regulations in Oregon effective January 1st. You can join us at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. So is there more of the desires of the Native Fish Society, would you say, reflected in the rules that do take effect on January 1st?
Yeah, I think the area that we're going to see more conflict, I guess, to put it that way, or more competing views on the way that fisheries should be regulated will come to salmon and steelhead, largely because many of those populations are listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. And so often they warrant more protection than less. And we would prefer that the precautionary principle be applied. And so if we have an opportunity to take a precautionary approach to protect these fish, then we should do so in the way that we angle for them.
I noticed that the Native Fish Society speaks in terms of four H's that are issues with native fish: hydroelectric dams, hatcheries, habitat, and harvest. So this brings us back around to the issue of hatcheries, and apparently there's a little room there. I mean, you have some room for hatcheries in the scheme of things as far as the Native Fish Society and rebuilding native fish stocks go?
Well, our hatcheries are a controversial topic for sure. And the way that we view hatcheries is that they've been a substitute for habitat degradation for 100 years. They've been a failed experiment on showing us that we could rebuild runs. The science is pretty clear that hatcheries do not rebuild wild populations. What we're talking about is there shouldn't be a hatchery on every river. We shouldn't be using hatcheries as a way to rebuild these populations, or at least add more fishing opportunity on top of them because of the negative effects that are the result of these hatcheries. And that's both genetic effects from interbreeding, and it's just ecological effects from competition for food and space within the water itself.
So, all right, let's take a call here. We have Heidi in Medford on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jake Crawford from the Native Fish Society.
Yeah, I have a question. How are you going to keep our fish safe from the possibility of mixing with genetically modified fish, which they apparently are going to do?
All right, interesting question. Thanks for that, Heidi.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a lot of those fish to my understanding, that they're genetically modifying are happening in ocean fisheries and net pens off the coast. I'm not sure whether we're seeing that happen right now in Oregon and California, but
it's farmed fish we're talking about.
Yeah,
even if it is ocean farming,
right? Mm-hmm. And so it's a little bit different from the way that, you know, what's happening now with hatcheries here. But
that is part of the issue with hatcheries. It's not that they're genetically modified in the sense of using the gene gun or anything like that, but that you're changing essentially a population of fish over time.
Yeah, exactly. You're domesticating that animal, essentially. You're putting it into a hatchery environment that is markedly different from it, what it experiences in the wild. Now, certainly there's different hatchery practices. And I think that, you know, the biggest thing to when you're discussing hatcheries is that you're looking at many different goals and practices. There's pretty much a hatchery for every Pacific salmonid species in the Pacific Northwest. And the reasons that there's a hatchery on the first fall Chinook on the Elk River on Oregon coast, and the reason that there's a summer steelhead hatchery program on the Snake River in Idaho, there's different goals and objectives there. And so you kind of have to break those pieces down if you really want to have a conversation about that.
Is there a particular position? I mean, does the Native Fish Society say we want all hatcheries gone within 50 years or anything like that?
No, I think our position has been that hatcheries are not a substitute for wild fish, and any hatchery that's an impediment to wild fish, we don't support. And an impediment may vary depending on the goals and the management practices for that. But mm-hmm. we don't want to see hatcheries operating at the expense of wild fish. And in some circumstances, and for even back as 100 years, I mean, the idea of a hatchery was that we don't have to worry about harvest regulations because we can make more fish.
Oh, right. Okay,
we don't have to worry about habitat degradation because we can make more fish.
It became a production line kind of thing.
That's exactly what it is, yeah.
All right. Well, a lot to think about, as always, when we talk to the Native Fish Society. So it sounds like overall you're pleased with the new regulations?
Yeah, I think we're happy to support the department and the commission on putting these forward, and we think that it was a positive step in the right direction.
Okay, so if you'll be fishing in Oregon after the 1st of January, make sure you check out the new rules. Jake Crawford is with the Native Fish Society. He's the River Steward Program Director. Jake, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Yeah, thanks for having me today.